While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners tuning in from every corner of the country and beyond. Thank you for joining us on Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Reading News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the stories shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. It's Monday, the 17th of November, 2025, and the time is 1300 hours, or that is 8 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, as we begin a brand new week, we continue to examine the developments influencing our nation's direction, from policy decisions in the corridors of power to the day-to-day realities unfolding in our communities. Here on the Radar, we don't just skim the headlines, we interrogate them. We analyze the context, challenge assumptions, and connect the dots, offering balanced, data-driven insights into the issues shaping Namibia's present and its path forward. Now, every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we bring you Namibia's most important conversations through expert interviews, in-depth commentary, archived perspectives, and of course, your voices that enrich and energize our national discourse. Because in a world where information moves fast, informed and understanding remains our most powerful tool. So as we bring you today's program, we'll highlight the key stories driving national debate, unpack their broader implications, and hear from those shaping Namibia's policy, economy, and governance landscape. Now remember, you can tune in on the Radar on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live on Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app, or join in on the conversation via WhatsApp channel, where we share exclusive clips, insights, and behind-the-scenes moment. Now, wherever you're listening from today, your office, your vehicle, or the comfort of your home, stay tuned, stay engaged, and stay curious. Because right here on the Reading News Analysis, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into these top stories. The Mobile Telecommunications Limited, that is MTC, this morning officially inaugurated its first mobile home at the Shoprite complex in Divundu, located in the Mugu constituency of the Kavango West region. Now, the opening marks a significant step in expanding telecommunication services to rural and remote communications. Residents who attended the launch expressed both relief and excitement, noting that they will no longer be required to travel nearly 200 kilometers to Rundu to access essential MTC services. Now, for many, the new outlet represents improved convenience, reduced transport costs, and quicker support for their communication needs. The event was headlined by the Minister of Information Communication Technology, Emma Theophilus, who delivered the keynote address. Now, MTC says the establishment of the Divundu Mobile Home forms part of its broader expansion strategy targeting Namibia's northeastern regions. Now, the telecommunications company cited a growing business involvement, increasing activity within the small and medium enterprise, or SME sector, and overall population growth as key drivers behind its decision to invest in new service centers. Now, the new outlet is anticipated to boost connectivity, enhance customer service access, and support economic activity within the Mukwe constituency and surrounding communities. Let's now take a listen to the minister, the ICT minister herself, that is Emma Theophilus.
Since August, and you have heard from Mr. Andreas, who designed your away and Tamba packages. In fact, by the way, if you are owing Tamba, I think he is the right guy to have a serious conversation about it. Maybe he will write off some of your debts. But I'm sure that you have heard that since August, we have been continuously opening up mobile shops Starting in Windhoek, which is a very urban area, moving to Omuthia, which is also a town but surrounded by many rural constituencies, and now we're in Kibundu. We do this, and we do this to ensure that communities see and feel when we bring services closer. And I can resonate with what the chairperson of Kibundu was talking about, to say there are those who claim that nothing is being done. And when things are actually being done, they are the first to claim that they are not good enough. I want to emphasize that when we listen to our communities, when they ask for services and we bring them, we make sure to ensure that they know that we brought the services closer to them. So Kibundu, we heard you, and now we're here today to make sure that MTC services are closer to you, the people of Kibundu. Ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you that, and I can inform you that in the last 5 years, I've been at the Ministry of ICT, first being a deputy minister and now the minister. Network connectivity in this country has gradually improved. You might find yourself in an area that the service has not fully reached you yet, but I can assure you that services are being expanded across the country. Just recently, MTC launched a very important project called Project Buffalo, meant to upgrade existing infrastructure. And I say this to indicate that sometimes we find instances, Honorable Governor, speaking to what you indicated, that there might be a tower that exists. But as you know, mobile phones are constantly changing and improving. We used to have iPhone 6, but now we have iPhone 17. So is the nature of technology. It continues to improve and expand. So you can also expect that network towers, in their nature, will need to be upgraded depending on the available technology of the day. We have recently launched 5G in August as well at the Ongediva Trade Fair in Ongediva, meant to ensure that you have a better service experience as clients and citizens of the Republic of Namibia. Therefore, this Project Buffalo is meant to continuously improve the services on those network towers, making sure that the quality is better, that it's able to cover a lot more distances, and to ensure that when there are towers that are 3G technology enabled, they become 4G technology or LTE technology enabled, and eventually 5G technology enabled. That is our commitment as the government of the Republic of Namibia. On top of that, as a Ministry of ICT, we made a directive already informing all operators that they now have to ensure that they actually give a service of 25 megabits per second download speed across the country as a minimum speed for services for all the clients that they service. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our commitment, that regardless of where you are, in an office, in a home, in a school, you are able to get 25 megabits per second download speed to ensure that connectivity is much faster. And that is why, indeed, although there are many, many gaps, our commitment remains to close those gaps, because development is continuous, it does not end, but we also tailor make it to the realities of the uniqueness of our country's topography and geographical shape. We cannot be compared to small countries that have a high population. Ours is unique in that we have a large country, a small population of 3 million people who are dispersed across the country. So you can imagine, when it comes to expanding network connectivity through cable infrastructure, the amount of kilometers we need to cover to ensure that communities are connected. But indeed, I say, our commitment is there, and this administration, the 8th administration, under the leadership of our President, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, continues to ensure that we have the necessary resources to make sure that expansion becomes a reality. And that is why, under our Universal Service Fund, under the Ministry of ICT, we have availed 40 million Namibian dollars in this financial year to make sure that we actually build network towers in the middle mile and the last mile where some network operators are unable to reach. This Wednesday, I'll be in Ohangwena region to officially launch 9 of the first batch of those network towers after that investment has been done for the Universal Service Fund to ensure that communities, not only in the Hambana region, as well as in the Karango East, some parts in the south, in any region with the lowest connectivity services in the country, continuously get connected to network connectivity in this country. So it gives me great pleasure, along with the team at MTC, the leadership of the Karango East region and the Dibundu village, to officially launch the mobile home in Dibundu, bringing services closer to the people so that the residents cannot travel hundreds of kilometers to the nearest town to replace a SIM card. And by the way, you can have an eSIM card as per the services of MTC to ensure that services are brought closer to the people.
Now, speaking at the event, East Mugwe constituency and pardon me. Let's listen to Mugwe constituency councillor.
This development responds directly to the needs of our people and reflects the commitment to leave no one behind. I wish to extend special gratitude to the Honorable Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Honorable Emma Theophilus, for her hardworking spirit, her visionary leadership, and unwavering dedication to improving digital access across Namibia. We just heard of that 40 million. Where 40 million? Where? Where? 40 million there. Honorable Minister, your presence here today demonstrates your commitment to rural development, youth empowerment, technological advancement, and inclusive national growth. Your leadership continues to inspire us, and we thank you sincerely for the energy and passion you bring into your portfolio. Can we give a round of applause, please? While thanking the Honorable Minister, I wish to bring to your attention the matter of Kangongo Network Tower, which has taken an unusual long time to be completed. I think we discussed it with you, Honorable Minister, and you advised me accordingly what to do as a regional councillor so that we can address that problem. Because the problem is that the contractor has reportedly abandoned the site and left workers unpaid and job not completed. Honorable Minister, our community is deeply concerned, and like you advise, I will definitely write a letter to your steam office to inform you officially on this very critical problem. This tower is critical for our communication needs, and we kindly request your intervention, like I said. Honorable Minister, as we celebrate the new MTC Mobile House, let us also recall Namibia's vision of 2030, our national commitment to becoming an industrialized country must not just go in vain, but it was a very serious commitment that this government had put forth, meaning there will be no excuses. By the year 2030, this country must be industrialized, because that is the vision of this country and the vision of this government. Now, how will this country be industrialized if some regions are left out, are still behind industrialization? So that is why we are so happy that with the announcement of the 40 million, I believe we will be an industrialized nation. For us to achieve this vision, digital connectivity must reach every corner of our constituency. Some inland parts, like other speakers have said, of Mugwe still lack network coverage. And in Dibundu, the chairperson has already also said that we're still experiencing very poor network in Dibundu. But the coming of the MTC mobile home, I think you will see it for yourself, and that problem will be then addressed. Let me also thank our Honorable Governor, really, for taking time to attend this very important event. Being the political head of the region is not that easy. And this time, as we are now approaching the elections, governors are also being assigned with various responsibilities. Honorable Governor, let me thank you for driving this bus. And here we are celebrating the new MTC mobile home. My appreciation also goes to the Divundu Village Council under the leadership of Honorable Christoph Kupengo now for creating a conducive environment for MTC to operate. The Shoprite complex, where this office is located,
with that being said, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
This development responds directly to the needs of our people.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashikeka peno nweku dite ofoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now, the 26th annual symposium held last week on 13 November marked a significant step in Namibia's commitment to advancing the creative economy as a driver of inclusive and sustainable growth. Now, the event brought together policymakers, creative practitioners, academics, and industry leaders for in-depth discussions on unlocking the sector's full potential. Throughout the symposium, speakers stressed the importance of addressing data gaps to inform evidence-based policy, improving access to finance for creators and cultural enterprises, integrating creative skills into the education system, and formalizing the sector to enhance its economic contribution. Now, in her closing remarks, Deputy Governor of the Bank of Namibia, Leonie Dunn, emphasized that the creative economy's promise lies in structural collaboration and coordinated support. She called on all stakeholders to meet the sector where it is and work collectively to elevate it. Now, speaking at the event, Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Sanet Steenkamp, spoke about how essential it is to strengthen the foundational enablers that support the creative industry sector in order for us to be able to fully harness the economic promise of Namibia's creative industry. Let's now take a listen to Sanet Steenkamp as she was speaking at the event.
It is both an honor and a privilege to address this 26th annual symposium of the Bank of Namibia, a platform that continues to shape national discourse, but also inspire economic transformation. And this year's chosen theme, unleashing the potential of the creative industries as a catalyst for economic development, could not be more timely, more essential, or more relevant, as this theme speaks directly to the very heartbeat of our national renewal. Under the 8th administration, the creative industries have been identified as a key driver of inclusive growth, a central pillar of our SWAPO Party Manifesto 2024 and the 6th National Development Plan. Ladies and gentlemen, the future of our nation will not be defined by the resources beneath our soil. We've heard that one before, but rather by the creativity that rises from within our very own people. And for too long, you will agree with me, esteemed guests, that Namibia's economy has relied on a rather narrow base: mining, fisheries, and agriculture. All these as economic enablers. And these sectors have indeed created value and have delivered and growing the economy. But we can also be brutally truthful to ourselves that it did not create all the sufficient jobs that we wanted. There was not enough inclusion and it was not resilient enough. If we are honest, we will all reflect and capture a memory of what COVID-19 brings to mind. And the COVID-19 pandemic exposed this vulnerability and reminded us that true wealth indeed lies not only in resources, but in ideas, in innovation and imagination of our people. And therefore it becomes imperative that as a country, we shift from being merely resource rich to truly becoming architects of relevance in a world that truly rewards creativity, intellect, and a drive for unthinkable and bold innovation and transformation. Let it be unthinkable. Let's not limit ourselves. The creative economy is one of the world's fastest growing sectors, an ecosystem that fuses culture, commerce, technology, and from the film and music industry to fashion, performing arts, advertising, design, gaming, architecture, and so many more, digital content. All these, in a report in 2024, this creative economy generates annually $2.3 trillion US dollar, as we've heard it already. and contributes over 3% to global GDP. More importantly, it employs over 6% of the world's workforce. And these are jobs that cannot be outsourced to machines. They are powered by human imagination. And Namibia, with its youthful, connected and tech-savvy population, has all the ingredients to lead this transformation. So if only we can create the conditions, the right conditions for our people to thrive. My government is committed to doing exactly that. We have elevated the creative industries to a national priority and integrated it as a core pillar in NDP 6. We are allocating funding to arts and creative initiatives and strengthening partnerships with UNESCO to improve copyright protection and institutional capacity. And local productions have received increased funding from institutions such as the Namibia Film Commission and the National Arts Council. And this support, ladies and gentlemen, will continue. Furthermore, as a country, we have launched the National Youth Development Fund, allocating 257 million to empower young Namibians, including those pursuing creative ventures. This linked directly to the call for action on confronting finances head on. How do we make it accessible? How do we make it doable without all the bureaucracies for our youth? Through the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, we are shaping the vision of a film and creative city, a space to attract investment, but also strengthen the value chain and showcase Namibia's talent to the world. Our national target is clear, and that is to contribute and to double the creative sector's contribution to the GDP from the current 1.5% already presented earlier to 3% over the next 5 years. And we need each one of you to help us to achieve that. However, ladies and gentlemen, the creative sector continues to face significant structural barriers. We are fully aware of the fragmented policies across the offices and ministries, the lengthy licensing and permitting processes, limited access to funding or finance and export platforms, but also the weak intellectual property protection and artists' rights. Those are key issues that we should not just mention, but really work in a collaborative, in a very close manner to redress them. The message from our creative industries is clear. Fix the ecosystem and the jobs will follow. That is why we will continue to work hand in hand with the public and private sectors to build a robust digital infrastructure, one that should enable Namibian artists to market, sell, and also distribute their work, not just locally, but globally. We must create secure, affordable, and inclusive payment systems. These were made reference to already by the former two speakers, that allow creators to produce, monetize, and be fairly compensated. Please do not request the artist to reduce the prices for their artworks. Please do not enter into negotiation. That is now Sanet Steenkamp speaking. Do not enter into negotiation for people to reduce, because you must be able to imagine the energy, the love, and the creativity that went into that piece of art, whether it's a jewelry piece. And I think every Namibian traveling, male or female, when you represent your country on an international platform, you wear your Kalahari pearls, your eggshells, or you wear locally made jewelry. Please embrace that. Now, I'm the one who broke Her Excellency's remarks. Please forgive me. ladies and gentlemen, it's only when we allow creators to produce, to monetize, and be fairly compensated, only then can we truly transition as a country from being a nation that consumes culture to one that exports it with pride. And who else to represent a country than an ambassador, which is yourself, your true, authentic self. Thank you, DM, for your creativity. And thank you for relating once more how important it is, how important our national identity is, and the fact that we must present ourselves in the most authentic of manners. Ladies and gentlemen, the power of the Namibian brand is undeniable. You are fully aware of our beautiful landscapes that hosted international productions such as Mad Max, Fury Road, The Mummy, Flight of the Phoenix, and thus generating direct economic impact and international recognition. Our people have truly inspired global admiration from the visits of Angelina Jolie, Gabriel Union, Roger Federer, and Will Smith up to Lewis Hamilton, who came to celebrate Namibia's natural and cultural beauty. Our people, and that's the emphasis of Her Excellency, that collective said we don't stand alone. We are a people together. And this global visibility of Namibia is priceless when we present ourselves in the manner that we do, in the most authentic, true, honest character. However, Her Excellency says, visibility must translate into a unified and compelling Namibian brand. It's not enough that our visibility is priceless. We must get more out of it, and we must demand more. And for this purpose, we have the symposium. I call, therefore, upon the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology, working alongside the NIPDB, to fast-track the development of a distinctive national brand that defines who we are, what we create, what we stand for and believe in. Thus, our identity, our creativity, and the potential of Namibia. My message to our young people, the digital natives of this generation, is clear. I wish for you, as president, that you move from being consumers of global content to producers of uniquely Namibian stories, products, and ideas. Your creativity should not be perceived as a pastime. You have to understand that it is an economic force, and you must respect it as such, and that it is your contribution to nation building. Therefore, we wish for you to embrace the opportunities in the film, fashion, in music, in all that has been mentioned, crafts, all in the creative industry. Ladies and gentlemen, I urge us all, therefore, to align our policies, our institutions, and our imagination to build a Namibia that is not only stable and resource-rich, but also creative, innovative, and opportunity-rich. I encourage us all to believe in the power of Namibian creativity, for it is not only the future of our economy, but actually, if we are honest, it's the heartbeat of our national identity, and we must claim it. As I conclude, I extend my heartfelt appreciation to the Bank of Namibia, to Governor Dr. Kavahap, the Deputy Governors, and the entire team, those who worked from behind the curtains, those who led from the front. I thank you for hosting this 26th annual symposium. Thank you for believing and for putting tangible, deliberative actions towards this economic development.
Now, speaking at the annual 2025 symposium, Governor of the Bank of Namibia, Johannes Gabagab, said, and I quote, Our creatives are not lacking in talent. They are stifled by the absence of financing, faced with disorganization within the sector, and limited by a dearth of opportunities. Now, to catalyze growth and innovation, we must leverage technology to scale our reach to a global audience. Imagine being in a world where you're filled, surrounded by people who have such good talent, such innovative ideas, people who can take the message across, whether it's an educative message, whether we're talking about celebrating World Health Day, I don't know, or perhaps talking about it's Diabetes Week or Diabetes Day, you know, things like that. And there are people who can translate this message and speak it out more clearly, that it makes more impact than obviously other people. And yet those people are lagging behind in support, in finances, in opportunities to showcase their talents. That is exactly where we are right now here in Namibia. Now, for South Africa, on the other hand, they're doing very well with their creative industry. And I would say perhaps, of course, there need to be some regulations here and there, but then they're doing quite a lot. They're doing massive in terms of creative industry. For us right here, sometimes they can be a child who's very gifted and talented, who can speak a message and be able to really speak it, and it means so much. It means so much to another child, and it's actually implemented in their minds as they are listening to another child, you know, using also creatives, perhaps dance moves, or perhaps talking in a particular manner, or using some dolls. Now, there are people obviously who have the skill, but then again, we are not boosting them up in order to, for them to reach their potential, in order for us to benefit from their creatives. So this 2025 annual symposium held by the Bank of Namibia is something worth to applaud, is something that is noteworthy. And also, the Bank of Namibia did speak about, pardon me, just hold on to it, that it will compile the key insights and recommendations from the symposium into a public booklet, which is expected to be released somewhere in this coming weeks, and that will help guide future policy interventions and sector development. Imagine, and this is what we need at this point. We need policies to be reformed and to align very well. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Your popular $99 combo is back at YouSave. Get 1 kilogram of each Rice King rice, Top Score or Bacoma Super Maize meal, Sugar King white or brown sugar, 500 grams of Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliter Right Brand sunflower seed oil. That's 5 essential products for only 99 Namibian dollars. YouSave. I save. Yes, we all save at YouSave.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Now I want to talk about my up and down. This is a handmade garment, which is a...
And now let's take a listen to Deputy Minister of Education, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, that is Tuno Baloti, also speaking at the Creative Industries 2025 Annual Symposium event.
Now I want to talk about my up and down. This is a handmade garment, which is making its debut today, where we champion creatives. And I want to make a special mention, or give a special mention, to the very talented Miss Kim Mateus. She's also an award-winning designer at that. And I want to just tell you, there you go. And I want to just share with you the ease of ordering this up and down. It'll stick in your mind. You'll be saying up and down all day. And it was an Instagram, I believe, paid advertisement where it pops up. So the algorithms clearly identified me as a potential consumer. And it was so easy in that I just had to click. It automatically took me through to WhatsApp, and it had a pre-written text that said, I'm interested in this garment, etc. With one or two text messages, a size, we're now no longer large. We're heading towards extra large, hopefully not double XL. It was very easy process to order a Namibian garment. And last night when I was preparing these remarks, I went back to that very post, and I want to share or to quote verbatim what she said. So please indulge me. Safari by CBK is a journey of reclaiming identity. We take the materials and objects that once entered our culture through colonial influence and reimagine them into garments that reflect the pride of our motherland. Each piece is crafted to honor Namibia's past while celebrating its future. This is heritage reborn in elegance, worn as a declaration of who we are. End quote. Let's give Kim a round of applause. And so this is not a paid advertisement. I did have to pay for this. But please do support more local designers. The former Ministry of Industrialization and Trade had a campaign that was called Buy Local, Grow Namibia. And this is exactly the message I wish to share today. When we truly empower our creatives, it means that we take advantage of them, not under the negative connotation, and also not through exposure. It was said last night that you cannot buy a bottle of Coke at ShopRite using exposure. You buy it with money. So I want to appreciate my colleague. I'm not sure if she's in attendance, as well as, or rather she's our Director of Arts and Culture, Ms. Mkariko Amagulu. Is she here? She's somewhere. She's there. Kiko, please stand for us just for a few seconds. I'll bring you here. Be careful. Okay. So let's give Kiko a round of applause. Thank you. So Kariko is our Director of Arts and Culture, as mentioned, but she's truly the heavy lifter when it comes to this very sector. And I actually wish that it was her giving the address this morning. And so with the permission of MM, I wish to digress from the prepared speech and place a short emphasis on why CCI is critically important, and not only for this caring government, but equally how it allows people to live their God-given purpose. I'm almost certain that each and every one of us in this room this morning have a close friend or family member in the creative economy. And that very friend or family member needs our support now more than ever. At last night's lecture, thank you very much again to the Central Bank as well as NUST, Menangula Awanja said, and I quote, "What gets talked about gets done." And Ms. Njoki also said, and I quote, "What gets measured gets funded." And Ms. Avril Joffe, last night your insights were phenomenal. Thank you. I couldn't stop taking notes. I was trying to decipher which notes I'll share today. But you spoke of a hexahelix. And I hope I'm not the only one that was yesterday years old to understand what a hexahelix is. So for the benefit of the audience, Ms. Joffe emphasized the importance of how academia, government, community, NGOs, and private sector, I think that's five, media, that's number six, are all sort of intersecting components. And these are the main actors that can truly unlock this creative economy. And I ask that we no longer use the word, and it's not in the policy, so Kiko, forgive me. We no longer use the word creative culture industry. I want us to talk about creative culture economy, as that is what we are advocating for today. So permission to be brutally honest, MM, for many years, this sector has been overlooked and equally under-resourced. The governor mentioned we prioritize what we resource, or rather we resource what we prioritize. But now, truly, truly speaking, we are witnessing something that's never been seen before, which is being championed by our president, Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, who has long advocated for the creative industries long before her presidency. Her leadership continues to emphasize the role of culture and creative economy, diversification, employment creation, as well as our national identity. Since independence, our government has recognized that arts and culture are vital to national development. We established the Directorates of Art, National Heritage and Culture Programs, and approved our first arts and culture policy in 2001. Fast forward 24, 25 years to today, we have a much stronger integrated framework called the Namibia Arts, Culture and Heritage Policy 2025 to 2030, which we launched earlier this year. It is a living policy, one that ties arts, culture and heritage directly to our economic and social goals. As a government, it is important to note that we have built strong institutions, to name only but a few, including the National Heritage Council, the National Arts Council, the Namibia Film Commission, the College of the Arts, the National Theatre, the National Arts Gallery, I could go on, and many others. These institutions have been the backbone of our creative ecosystem, nurturing talent, preserving the English heritage, and promoting creativity across Namibia. We are currently finalizing the revised National Arts Fund Bill to improve funding and other support to artists, as well as the Copyright and Related Rights Bill to better protect our creators and their intellectual property in this digital age. We need to ensure that young people can access these digital value chains, that our systems support cross-border payments, and that our creatives are fairly compensated for their work. And now to land. Dr. Gavagap, our governor, this is where we need your help more than ever. It is our view that the central bank can truly champion and facilitate digital payment systems to enable creatives to digitally monetize their craft directly and through other means cross-border. I noted in your address when you spoke of the instant payment platforms. It is only when we get this very important component right that we will see a generation of self-employed young Namibians creating, exporting, and contributing to our national GDP through this very sector we are advocating for today. PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay, etc. will unlock social media monetization, and we need your help to unlock this for the Namibian creatives. As I now close, allow me to truly thank our central bank for this much needed symposium, which places the creative industries at the very center. And as far as my AI prompting could tell me, it is a first in its history, and we definitely believe that it shall not be the last.
Yeah, and there you had it from those that are up there. And obviously, I think it's quite applauding also to know that policies and reforms could come out of this, especially out of the booklet. And I know that creative industry, those who are into the creative industry, are jubilating, but I think they'll jubilate more when everything is tangible and everything is on the ground or able to touch it. They're able to touch and feel it with their own hands. But yeah, this is On the Reader News Analysis. Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders. Now, remember, you can also partake in the news analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Please come through. Air opinions and contributions right here with us.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Reader News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off straight in South Africa, where South Africa, in regards to the G20 summit, South Africa is talking about disaster risk reduction among South Africa's priorities. Interesting. Let's take a listen.
In Johannesburg for this event successfully. Thousands of international delegates, media representatives, visitors are expected to gather at the Nasrec Expo Center in Johannesburg for the two-day summit that's going to be taking place this coming weekend. Now, Sakina and the team are actually broadcasting live from the Minister's G20 Morning Live breakfast broadcast. This is just one of many events that are being held in the countdown to this weekend's G20. So let's go back to Sakina, find out who she's going to be in conversation with. Sakina?
Well, thanks so much, Shelly-Ann, and the volume of noise has gone up because the official proceedings have wrapped up, but of course people still milling around and many discussions still being had, as no doubt they will continue throughout the week. But I'm joined now by the man, he was the MC a short while ago. He joins us now because he is South Africa's Sue Sherpa for the G20, Ambassador Xolisa Mabongo. Thanks so much for speaking to us this morning.
Greetings to you and to your listeners.
So, as the Sue Sherpa, you're the man who sits and oversees all the technical conversations and aspects to this G20. Talk to us about your observations so far, and also, more importantly, South Africa's priorities that they foreground for this particular summit.
Thank you very much. This morning we had a very good discussion on the four main priorities of the South African presidency. That is disaster risk reduction, assisting indebted countries with debt sustainability, the just energy transition, and critical minerals. As you can see, these are not just South African priorities, but they are priorities of the African continent. They respond to the challenges that the African continent and the global South is facing. So where we are now is that yesterday we started the meeting of the Sherpas here in Johannesburg. So all the G20 Sherpas arrived 2 days ago in Johannesburg. We started the negotiations of the leaders' declaration. Yesterday was the first day. I can say that the mood in the room is very positive. We are sure that as a host country, we will achieve a good outcome from the negotiations. All delegations are constructive, cooperative. Everybody wants to keep the integrity of the G20 to make sure that this very important formation of these 19 countries, plus the EU and the AU, continues to play their role in the governance of world affairs.
And Ambassador, for South Africans watching, you know, for them it's about the real, tangible, practical aspects of this G20. What does it mean for ordinary South Africans?
It means a lot for ordinary South Africans. I mean, if you look at the four priorities, let's take the issue of critical minerals. South Africa is a mining country for over 100 years. But what we are talking about in these conversations is about how do we ensure that we can add a value at source? How do we ensure that we can beneficiate minerals here in South Africa and in other African countries? How do we ensure that the communities that live around the mining areas are accommodated in the whole ecosystem of the mining sector? So these are conversations that are new that South Africa is putting on the table. We are saying that the era where we were only doing mining from an extraction perspective, where we are simply taking the raw materials out of our mines and exporting them abroad without beneficiating them, creating more jobs and more value locally. So an ordinary South African will benefit from the value creation that will be done with the mining that we are discussing, the narrative that we are building in the G20. Secondly, when we talk about the just energy transition, which is one of the four priorities, again, it has got a very a big impact on our local communities as we move away from coal towards greener technologies, towards greener energy systems. We want to make sure, and that's what we were emphasizing during the discussion earlier, that the just part of the just energy transition should mean that the people who are around our coal mines benefit, that they transition, the workers who are currently involved in the coal power plants, they actually transition and get reskilled, retrained, so that they can participate in new job opportunities. So the G20 and the four priorities that South Africa has set has a very direct and impact on our people.
And of course, you know, all of this ultimately leads to this weekend's leader summit. And there is somewhat of a concern, Ambassador, about what will happen after our presidency lapses as South Africa, whether what has been discussed and the groundwork that has been laid in this particular G20 and the few leading up to it, whether all of that will be reversed, given some of the geopolitical tensions within the G20.
Well, it is true that the G20 presidents of South Africa occurs at a time of rapid changes in the world, geopolitical tensions, geoeconomic tensions. However, the issues that we are dealing with are actually long-term issues, whether we are talking about inequality, fighting climate change. Those issues all transcend a presidency, one presidency. So we are discussing them now. We hope that they will be discussed under the American presidency, but at the same time, they will be taken up in other presidencies beyond.
It says also talking about severe weather warnings issued for multiple provinces.
We're joined by Edward Engelbrecht from the South African Weather Services. Good evening, and thank you for joining us on Late Edition.
Good evening.
What can we expect overnight and tomorrow?
Yeah, so from overnight into tomorrow, I think we're already the levels for Gauteng especially. We see a bit of clearance of rainfall for the rest of the evening. So for the northern parts of Gauteng, we've downgraded the warning now to a level 6, and then the rest of Gauteng to a level 4 for disruptive rainfall. So we are seeing some clearance of rainfall. It's still going to continue raining, although it's going to be just light rain for the rest of the evening. And then going into tomorrow, we're going to see further clearance. So tomorrow we still have a 60% chance for rain tomorrow. However, it's going to be mostly light rain. And as for alerts, we don't have anything for tomorrow over Gauteng. The only alerts at the moment for tomorrow is as the system moves further eastward, we do expect some disruptive rain for the low veld of Mpumalanga and Limpopo. So we do have a level 2 warning out there for disruptive rain that may still continue there for the duration of tomorrow. But for the rest of the country, it's we do see a clearance of rain going into tomorrow.
It seems like summer started on a rather rainy note, especially in Gauteng, and it's been quite cold. Is this usual for this time of year?
It is October, November. We can still see usually cold fronts still affecting parts of the northern parts of the country. So as in this case, there's quite a lot of cold air that's been circulated behind the cold front. So it is usual for this time of the year, although we should note that as per our seasonal forecast, it did indicate already above normal rainfall conditions especially for the early part of summer. Although it's slightly above normal rainfall, it does seem like it was on track from the seasonal forecast. But yes, especially this time of the year, we can still expect cold weather, which is fairly normal for November, yes.
Is that around the country in general?
That's around the country, yes, in general. And then also to mention the western parts of the country this time of the year can then expect them hotter conditions. So as we see now, past few days over Western Cape provinces has had very hot temperatures. But for most of the country, yes, we still, especially this time of year, we still have the influence of cold fronts moving through. But what makes this a bit more different this time of year is then we start seeing the influence more of tropical moisture coming in, so often we'll have periods during the summer. I think if listeners will also remember last year as well, there was sort of similar conditions as well, where we had fairly cold but wet conditions because of this combination of moisture coming in from the Indian Ocean, from the tropics, with cold fronts that may still affect especially the eastern parts of the provinces.
Now, we've got the G20 summit coming up in just a few days, and that's going to be taking place in the south of Johannesburg. Do you have any information on the weather conditions in the southern parts of Johannesburg towards later on this week?
Yeah, so for later on this week, it's still quite far ahead. There's only, at the moment, we only have a 30% chance of afternoon thunderstorms for parts of Gauteng later during the week. Going into tomorrow again, and Tuesday, as well as Wednesday, only 30% chance of rainfall expected. So, as it looks now, we don't expect any significant rainfall, but we were a bit worried that the high amount of rainfall today may still affect parts of disrupted parts of Johannesburg. So it's also why we've gone for a higher level, because knowing that the G20 summit is on its way, So, but for the duration of the week, only 30% chance of rain expected.
Thank you so much, Edward Engelbracht from the South African Weather Service.
Let's move over to Zambia now. Zambia held down some conversations on hydropower and solar integration, identifying them as key to Africa's clean energy future.
Livingstone, the country's tourist capital, will on Monday, November 17, 2025, host the 35th Africa Hydro Symposium. This year's symposium will bring together hydropower companies, engineers, researchers, manufacturers, and other key industry players.
This year's symposium is anchored under the theme Powering Africa's Transition, Hydro Solutions for a Changing Climate. This theme reflects an urgent reality, which is Africa's energy future depends on our ability to develop resilient, adaptive, and sustainable hydropower systems that respond to the climate challenges we face today.
Hydropower companies are stepping up interventions aimed at reviving and sustaining the country's energy supply.
We have an installed capacity of 56 megawatts, and currently we're implementing a 27 megawatt solar PV, which once commissioned will ensure that we'll be able to conserve, or rather save, at least 30% of our annual volume of water that we use to supply power at that capacity.
We have supported the growth of Zambia's mining and industrial sectors through reliable power generation, transmission, distribution, and supply. Our track record both in Zambia and across the region continues to demonstrate our commitment to energy security, operational excellence, and innovation.
Industry experts say hydropower remains a vital component of national energy security, even as solar and other alternative sources continue to grow.
These sources such as solar and wind, they're sinusoidal, they're up and down, like we said, because of the cloud cover. For wind power, the wind speeds keep changing. So they need another source such as hydro or any other source you might talk about to come in to support those changes in solar and wind in terms of generation.
With more than 150 delegates expected from across the continent, this year's gathering will be the first in-person symposium since 2019, following disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Ajo Avime, ZNBC News in Livingstone.
Inaugural summit brought together policymakers.
Uganda hosts a summit on strengthening Africa's health.
Experts and innovators with a shared goal, building health systems that can stand on their own during emergencies. Under the theme, Reclaiming Africa's Health Future, discussions focused on lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic and the urgent need to boost the continent's capacity to detect, respond to, and prevent health threats.
Africa is already a laboratory of ideas, mobile money health payments, drone deliveries, and AI-assisted diagnostics. Our scientists lead in genomic surveillance. Our researchers and programs have driven the trials and rollouts of malaria vaccines, now expanding across the continent.
Speakers said self-sufficiency in the health sector can be achieved through building stronger research institutions, expanding local production, and ensuring African governments lead on policy while treating health as a foundation for long-term growth.
The time has come to redefine health as a pillar of economic growth and not as a social afterthought. We must build sovereignty in production, in research, and in policy.
Delegates also linked health sovereignty to economic stability and continental security, urging coordinated action among African states.
Here in Kampala, delegates say this first summit lays the groundwork, boosting African manufacturing, training health workers and adopting technologies like drones and diagnostic apps. The goal is simple, to be ready for the next crisis long before it emerges.
There was also a strong push to harmonize regulations so that African-made medicines, vaccines, and diagnostics can move more easily across borders.
We must harmonize regulatory frameworks to allow medicines, vaccines, diagnostics, and health technologies developed in one African state to be distributed efficiently across the continent.
Participants called on governments to match political commitments with real investments in local industry, research, and technology. Across the venue, innovators showcased homegrown health tools from diagnostic apps to locally made medical supplies as delegates positioned Kampala as a rising hub for Africa's health agenda and the start of a long-term push for health sovereignty. Michael Balekesi, GTN, Kampala.
Meanwhile, leaders pledge peace and cooperation at the Great Lakes Summit.
A summit aimed at establishing peace and security in the Great Lakes region. Four presidents and senior officials from the 12 countries that make up the International Conference on the Great Lakes region gathered in Kinshasa to discuss ways of ending the conflicts that have plagued their region for decades. The Democratic Republic of Congo has taken over the rotating presidency of the body from Angola.
Le pacte sur la stabilité, la sécurité et le développement de 2006.
The Pact on Security, Stability and Development of 2006 remains the bedrock of our community. It is time to accelerate the application of the Protocol of Non-Aggression.
Sudan, the Central African Republic and the DRC are some of the member states of the Great Lakes body that are facing conflicts. Fighting between DRC government forces and the M23 rebels has left thousands dead and displaced millions since late 2021. But the two warring parties have signed a framework deal for peace in the Qatari capital of Doha. The UN Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region, Wang Xia, called for an end to the fighting.
The resolution of the crisis in Eastern DRC requires a holistic and long-term approach which focuses on the root causes of the chronic instability.
African leaders have been advocating for the resolution of conflicts in the continent by themselves, but several failed attempts in ending the DRC conflict led the US and Qatar to step in. The DRC president and his Rwandan counterpart are expected to sign a comprehensive peace deal in the US capital later this month.
African leaders here at the Great Lakes Summit are pushing for stronger economic ties and better management of the region's mineral wealth, arguing it's the only path to lasting peace. Chris Ochamringa, CGTN, Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Fast-track asylum deportations to be announced by the UK government.
Next, here in the UK, the government will announce plans to fast-track the deportation of illegal migrants as part of a sweeping reforms of the UK's asylum policy. It comes after the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, told the BBC that illegal immigration was tearing the country apart. Well, she made the comments as she shared further details of changes to the system. So, under the new proposal, asylum seekers will only be able to stay for 2.5 years before being reassessed, instead of the current 5. At the moment, after 5 years, people can apply for permanent residence. But the new plans will require them to wait 20 years before being allowed to do that. However, the government says there will be ways to apply to live here permanently earlier if people use safe and legal routes to arrive and if they're working and contributing to society. Also plans to overhaul how human rights legislation is applied in migration cases. Well, this comes as the latest figures on migrant crossings in small boats found that the nearly 600 people who arrived over the week to Saturday brought the total for the year to nearly 39,300. That's up by nearly a fifth on this time last year, but just behind the level we saw at this stage in 2022, which was the peak year so far. Now, Joe Buck has more.
The sound of protests on the issue of immigration have been heard for months. Yesterday in Crowborough, East Sussex, people were opposing plans to house male asylum seekers at a nearby army camp. And the Home Secretary believes there are similar stories across the UK.
It is an issue that is dividing our country, and I see this polarisation all over the country, including in my own constituency. We have a system that is out of control, it's unfair, and it's putting huge pressure on communities.
Today, the Home Secretary will announce she's overhauling human rights law to make deporting illegal migrants easier. She plans to change the law so those refused asylum can't make multiple appeals. And Shabana Mahmood will also threaten visa bans on three African countries, Namibia, Angola and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, unless they start accepting the return of thousands of their criminals and illegal immigrants.
The Home Office has for decades been seen as a political poison chalice, full of pitfalls and dangers. Shabana Mahmood's team hope this plan, which they argue is comprehensive and common sense, will avoid all of those. But there are already sceptics in the Labour Party.
Folkestone MP Tony Vaughan has tweeted, "The Prime Minister said in September that we are at a fork in the road. These asylum proposals suggest we have taken the wrong turning. The idea that recognised refugees need to be deported is wrong. We absolutely need immigration controls, and where those controls decide to grant asylum, we should welcome and integrate, not create perpetual limbo and alienation."
This won't necessarily be the silver bullet, and I think the government recognises that. It's taking a quite broad approach. It's also focusing on enforcement, focusing on return deals. This is unlikely to be on its own a silver bullet that reduces small boat arrivals substantially. But is it a part of a broader strategy? Yes. Will people know about these kinds of restrictions such that it will deter them in large numbers? We'll just have to wait and see.
As the Home Secretary prepares to sell her plans to Parliament, both the Conservatives and Reform UK have expressed doubts as to whether these proposals will ever get through the Commons. Joe Pike, BBC News, Westminster.
And we go live to Westminster now. Our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman, is standing by. Hi, Henry. We're going to hear more details in Parliament later. What do you make of what we've heard so far?
Well, it is undeniably a very extensive package. In the government's eyes, the most extensive reforms to the asylum system in the UK for decades. And I think the fact that there's such an extensive package with so many different measures in it means there's going to be a lot for MPs to digest, and critically, a lot that Labour MPs from Shabana Mahmood's own side could potentially object to, as you were hearing from Joe there. I think important to stress that the unease, and I don't put it more strongly than that, but the unease with these plans within the Labour Party is not confined to the left of the Labour Party, not confined
Samson
to the wing of the Labour Party.
Samson says it will invest hundreds of billions of dollars at home.
To the direction of travel on every policy area from
this
government.
There are
people who might more typically ally themselves with Keir Starmer or with Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, who are a bit unsure about these plans, do wonder whether they go too far. So I think Shabana Mahmood's task in the House of Commons later today isn't just to put a parliamentary flavour on what we've seen her announce over the last few days. It is also to win over some wavering Labour MPs.
And what about any assessments about how effective these measures will or won't be?
Well, it's important to say that the measures are not going to be retrospective. So they won't affect the people who are already here under the existing system. And obviously, much of the frustration that we've seen on the streets as well as in our politics over the past year or two at illegal immigration as it stands is by definition about the situation as it stands. So I think, you know, Shabana Mahmood is going to...
Samsung Hyundai to invest billions at home after US South Korea deal.
Samsung says it will invest hundreds of billions of dollars at home and expand its chip-making capacity amid the global boom in artificial intelligence. Samsung and Hyundai were among major South Korean companies to announce domestic investment plans on Sunday after a U.S. trade deal with South Korea sparked worries that it may weaken local manufacturing. The deal, finalized on Friday, includes a pledge by the country to invest $350 billion in U.S. strategic sectors. In a meeting with business leaders on Sunday, South Korea's President Lee Jae-myung said he was concerned that pledge may lead to domestic investment shrinking. He asked the companies to consider putting more money into their home country and suggested they consult with the government to make effective use of the $350 billion U.S. investment package. As part of Samsung's plan to invest some $310 billion at home over the next 5 years, its electronics arm said it will add a chip production line at its complex in Pyeongtaek. The P5 plant production line has been delayed since late 2023 amid slowing demand for chips for smartphones and PCs and oversupply, according to public company filings. But a global rush for AI chips has tightened supply, with semiconductor prices now surging. Samsung Electronics this month raised prices of certain memory chips by as much as 60% compared to September, sources told Reuters. Samsung said mass production at the plant, part of the world's biggest chip complex, will begin in 2028.
Meanwhile, Ukraine secures U.S. gas imports from Greece to meet their winter energy needs.
Όλης της φυσικού αερίου από τον κύριο Κωνσταντίνο Ξηφαρά.
To compensate for the destruction of our own production by the Russians, our agreements with Greece today are an important part of the large energy package that we have prepared for this winter to provide Ukraine with gas. Gas supplies will begin in January, and it is important that our first agreements are implemented in the first quarter. Also, in addition to the agreement on the immediate supply of gas, there are also long-term agreements.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of this episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi, and thereafter the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30, and the Business Economic segment brought to you by David Shombe from 1800 Hours. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency, or same radio app, or same radio website, that is Eagle FM. Goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful day.